is CBS Eye on the World. Here's John Batchelor.
February 24th, 2022, the day the world changed again. The invasion of Ukraine by the Russian Federation, and soon afterwards, the apparent alliance between the Russian Federation and the People's Republic of China. That date, that moment, is critical to understand a new book, The Decisive Decade, American Grand Strategy for Triumph Over China. I welcome the author, Jonathan D.T. Ward. Jonathan, a very good evening to you. Thank you for this. February 24th, 2022, at war in Europe. But China also entered the conversation by saying it was allied in several languages with Vladimir Putin. Was that something the People's Republic of China had counted on? They were doing so well, and then everything changed. Good evening to you, Jonathan.
Good evening, John, and great to be with you. Well, I think the Russia-China axis has been, at this point, at least a decade in the making. I mean, we can trace it back even to Crimea in 2014 when Putin seized Crimea. And, of course, China began its military island building in the South China Sea. And the points of contact between the Russian and Chinese militaries have really expanded since then. And I was living in Beijing during 2014. And I remember in Chinese language listening to all sorts of programs that were supportive of Russian propaganda towards their own operations in Ukraine, and hearing that only in Chinese and thinking, wow, this is not something that most people are aware of. But here we see it in full force. And just before the invasion of Ukraine, I mean, a scene that's almost out of the 1930s, where in the Beijing Olympics, Vladimir Putin, Xi Jinping's quote unquote best friend, comes to China and they declare their no limits partnership. And that is simply one more iteration of what has been called for years now, the comprehensive partnership of strategic coordination for a new era. And in that document, which I've explored in the new book, The Decisive Decade, they lay out a relationship of a more enormous, I think, philosophical depth in addition to its military and economic depth. And my opinion at this point is that above all, it's a military relationship where if we do see China act upon its own, claims in the Indo-Pacific, they, of course, want to have their partner in Moscow at their back. And they've made that much clear in their own statements over the years. But we're seeing the beginning of a return to a world that is divided between allies and adversaries, dictatorships and democracies. And China, of course, is the real reason that all of this is going to be so big. I mean, Putin alone is not something that we can't handle, but Russia and China together is an axis that will shape this decade and beyond to the detriment of the world. And of course, the new book, The Decisive Decade, goes far beyond that moment and into the need for a new American grand strategy to overcome the challenge posed by the People's Republic of China and the Chinese Communist Party. My first book, China's Vision of Victory, laid out their entire vision in their own words and documents and deeds. The fact that there is a global Chinese grand strategy, that it relies on economic depth, military power, ideological concepts, and of course, global diplomacy. And we have to make sure that that never comes to pass. So, Russia's war in Ukraine has, I think, showed us that geopolitics is a serious thing and it's going to redefine the world. But then what we really have to do is ensure that the People's Republic of China never completes the turning point in history that its party leaders imagine.
China has a plan, but as we've learned from famous men, you have a plan and the moment you meet a foe, you tear it up and start again. China's plan does not include the luck of geography. The U.S. has the luck of geography. Two oceans protect us from the depredations of the old world. But China, as you make it very clear, has a geography that has no natural borders. The Tibetan Plateau, the Mongolian and Xinjiang Desert, and the South China Sea, the Western Island Chain, all of which are impossible to guard, hence the Great Wall of China once upon a time, which didn't work. That is something that they're dealing with now by what? How are they responding to the fact that they don't have natural frontiers?
Well, sure. And this has been a problem for China's leaders for centuries. And certainly in the modern period where, Chiang Kai-shek identified the six fortresses that would protect the heartland of modern China, and he included Xinjiang and Tibet and Manchuria and Mongolia, and then Taiwan and some of the islands in the South China Sea. And then, of course, Mao inherits that vision, and today's Communist Party seeks to handle this in a much more global way. And I think that's part of what we're going to have to deal with here. I mean, China's global economic power at this point is being converted into military power that's initially focused on the Indo-Pacific, on the island chains, on their frontiers, on the Himalayas. And they've fought many, many wars in these geographies, even in the first 20 years of the Communist Party.
So you see that Beijing sees its weakness, its geographical weakness. It understands that.
They certainly do. And their approach to that is on one hand, the Belt and Road, which seeks to consolidate the economic geography of, multiple continents from all of Eurasia and Africa, important essential oceans, the Indian Ocean, the South China Sea, and they envision multiple maritime economic corridors. And then they seek to project military power across the Belt and Road, and they've made that absolutely clear. So by definition, their strategy is a strategy of expansionism. It's certainly economic empire in a sense, and then military expansion, which will, I think, pick up an ever greater pace through the course of this decade. And if we do not win the overall strategic contest, or at least some very, very key elements of it in the 2020s. The 2030s are going to be incredibly tough for us to have a China that's larger and, more militarized and has a more global footprint.
What does Taiwan represent in terms of this geographical weakness? How does Beijing look at Taiwan?
Well, some of China's military analysts have called it the lock on the island chain. So when they think about the two chains in the Pacific, which are principally made up of U.S. allies and where the U.S. has a significant military presence, China's own military strategists talk about Taiwan as the lock that they can break. And if they're able to recapture Taiwan as they see it, then they have the ability to project power into the Western Pacific, but also, throughout the maritime geography of Asia and the Indo-Pacific. So in that sense, it's very important. And there are also, I included a manual, a Chinese Air Force manual, where it talks about the seizure of Taiwan would enable them to create famine in the Japanese islands. So they look at it as part of a much broader potential to exert power and even undertake war in Asia. If they are able to hold Taiwan, it changes the military balance of Asia, I think, quite permanently in that sense. And then the other side of it, of course, is economics. I mean, semiconductors today is really one of the linchpins of the global economy, if not the most important piece. So there are clear economic repercussions. And then there's also the ideological side of it, where Xi Jinping has made it clear that he seeks to not have this question, the Taiwan question, passed to future generations, but some very ominous statements from the highest levels
of
China's leadership.
Can we say simply that Taiwan's a problem they need to solve first? So let's go to outer space, because that could be part of the Taiwan solution. China seeks to dominate wherever it goes. Understand that. Right now, I read you carefully here, informing the U.S. Space Force, we have responded to the Chinese advantage. Is it adequate, Jonathan?
Well, no. I think we're starting to get into a vision of how space works, not only in conflict and in war fighting and in space security, but also in terms of space-time economics. I mean, we're going to need a far broader vision for how to handle space. And, we have China's, some of their space leaders talking about, they have compared the moon and Mars to islands, which they claim in the East and South China Seas, and made it very clear. They say, if we don't go there first, our ancestors will not forgive us. So they have a vision of space that I think is absolutely about dominance. We're going to be in a de facto space race with the People's Republic of China. And, the Space Force itself, which is going to have to focus on one hand on war fighting and the role of space in terrestrial conflict, because, a great deal of China's military planning in the Pacific does involve potentially going after U.S. space architecture or intelligence, surveillance, and reconnaissance. And now they're looking at ways to destroy something like Starlink, if that were to be put up. I mean, they've studied the role of Starlink in the Ukraine contest, and they understand that, they would want to be able to close that off over Taiwan if they were to
go across the Straits. Let's go to the economic arena. which heretofore would have been what we mostly talked about, but not since February 24th, 2022. We're at war with Russia and its ally, China. Jonathan Ward, Jonathan D.T. Ward, the book is The Decisive Decade. We're in it. American Grand Strategy for Triumph Over China. When we come back, what about the money? This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm Jonathan.